Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Harry, the big news from yesterday was the Deshaun Watson decision. Yep. He will miss 6 games as of now. He's suspended 6 games. There's one open civil case. He settled the others, but I will remind everyone there were 20 at one. What's the high number? 24 open civil cases against him. No criminal charges brought, but 24, two dozen open civil cases at one point, all alleging very similar, essentially sexual assault from massage. The accusers were massage therapists.
Right.
So we get it. I get it. Just because a crime is difficult to prove does not mean you lower the burden of proof. Even in a certain political climate or social climate, you're not supposed to lower the burden of proof. On the other hand, that is in a court of law. In a court of public opinion, if you hear 24 separate accusers saying largely the same thing, it's hard to turn off your brain.
Well, your antennas have to raise as well. Because it's hard to have that many people. I would even say if you have 2-3 people, that's enough to make your antennas rise.
Jake Trotter, ESPN, Browns reporter on this very program, talking about what could happen on the football field for the Cleveland Browns now that we know it will be, as of now, 6 games that Deshaun Watson will miss. And they have Jacoby Brissett backing him up. But there's an intriguing possibility out there on the trade market, and it would not cost an arm and a leg to get him. Listen to this.
I wouldn't completely rule it out. I mean, I think that they'll have a discussion about maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, since there don't seem to be a lot of other suitors right now. You know, maybe he comes cheap. Maybe they can rework the deal. But right now, I think the plan is Jacoby Brissett. And I think they feel like 6 games, they can ride it out. You know, the schedule is pretty favorable the first month of the season. They feel like they could maybe be at 4-2, give or take, by the time Deshaun Watson comes back, which would keep him squarely in the mix. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I think right now the plan is Jacoby Brissett.
It makes sense, Harry, because bringing in Garoppolo is kind of a big move, even if it doesn't cost you a lot. And Brissett's a good backup. But Jimmy Garoppolo, I'll just remind everyone once again, as I did in the last hour, and I'm being a little slick here because it's not just the last 2 seasons I'm talking about. I'm talking about the last 2 seasons that Garoppolo was healthy. So 3 seasons ago, he was healthy. 2 seasons ago, he was hurt. Last season, he was healthy.
Correct.
In those 2 seasons where he was healthy, when you add up his playoff runs, he went deeper into the playoffs than any other quarterback in the NFL when they were healthy in the last 2 seasons, right? When they were on the field. So Tom Brady won a Super Bowl, yes. Garoppolo came one throw away. But then Brady didn't get back to the NFC Championship game. Garoppolo did. Patrick Mahomes was running for his life in a Super Bowl without an offensive line against that, you know, the Bucs in that Super Bowl Brady won. And then he got trounced in the AFC title game this year. Garoppolo was one throw away from winning the Super Bowl, and the next time he was healthy, he got by Aaron Rodgers and came one interception away from going back to the Super Bowl. So Brissett's a good backup. Garoppolo's a good quarterback,
yeah.
Good starting quarterback. Should they go get him? The Cleveland Browns.
Not with it being 6 games. I don't think so. Anything 12 games and above, you go and get Jimmy Garoppolo because he can help your team win, and you look at that strong run game, you look at that offensive line, you have 2 solid tight ends, you have a top-5 defense. So in those regards, yes, because you don't want to just waste a Super Bowl roster, a team that has the pieces in place for you to go out there and actually win right now. But the fact that it's 6 games, and the first 6 games is against Carolina, the Jets, the Pittsburgh, the Atlanta Falcons, the Chargers, and New England Patriots. When Deshaun Watson would be able to return would be against the Baltimore Ravens October 23rd. And then we all know a week after that on Halloween night, October 31st, I think it's Monday Night Football, he's going against the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. So that's when he would be coming back. So one divisional opponent. And I'm not going to sit up here and say that the Cleveland Browns are just going to win those first 6 games. I'm not going to sit up here and say that by any means. Are their chances high? Yes, they are. But every day you have to come out and play no matter who your opponent is. Because we see time and time again throughout an NFL season, we've seen the Jets last year beat a Tennessee Titans team. You see teams at the lower spectrum, not as good as other teams in the NFL that's at the high point of the spectrum, beat the best teams. And that's because you have to show up to play every single day. You can't take anything for granted.
The other thing is, if you have an advantage by bringing Jimmy G in, Like, you got to win on the margins in the NFL. If that gives you a marginal advantage over Brissett, to me, go do it. Also, have Jimmy G on your roster in case Deshaun winds up hurt or anything like that, you know? The interesting thing to me about Deshaun is when last on the field, he was a top five NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But some stuff has happened since then.
Yep.
Josh Allen's come up in the world. Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert have entered the league. And I'll tell you the truth, even when you mentioned that divisional matchup against the Bengals, Monday Night Football, the week after he comes, Deshaun is slated at this moment to come back. What a matchup, Watson against Burrow.
Well, the week before, the matchup against Lamar and Watson.
Yeah, Lamar, crazy. And you have all these, now three of these teams have great quarterbacks, like legitimately great quarterbacks. I would rather have Joe Burrow than Deshaun Watson. The reason I say that is Joe Burrow is a better college player at his best than Deshaun. And so far as a pro, in his first full season as a pro, Burrow came one Aaron Donald play away from winning the Super Bowl. It's unfair to Deshaun because he's been on terrible Texans teams,
yep,
and he's carried them. But I need to see a guy make a playoff run first. And I haven't seen that from Deshaun yet.
Well, I agree with you. And when you look at Deshaun and you look at the totality of his career, I think Deshaun only has one playoff win, right? And I remember them playing Kansas City and being up in that game by a significant amount, but Bill O'Brien at the time making egregious decisions on a football field that actually led to a comeback and Kansas City coming back and winning that football game. So when you factor in all those things, but I also seen Deshaun Watson be Houdini, and you think he's going to be sacked against the Buffalo Bills, and then he gets out of it and make the Michael Jordan-type plays that we hear Dabo Sweeney talk about.
Well, going back to college, he's the best player on the field in the national title game. They lose because Alabama's just better.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, he comes back, and they win because he makes a miracle throw, and his receiver makes a miracle catch.
Stop.
And when
it was a miracle.
When I see that. But you see it.
Because
like,
I know the route combination, right?
I get it, but it was a 50-50 ball that the receiver got.
No, I mean, it's man coverage, right? And you got the DBs on the same level, so you're going to take number one outside. He's going to come in and pick the DB overneath him, so it's going to be a wide-open throw to a Hunter Renfrow. You just got to
make I'm not talking about that play.
That
I'm talking
one?
About No, I'm not talking about the touchdown. I'm talking about the play for first down. Who was the throw to? It was a 50-50 ball the receiver got.
Oh, Mike Williams.
Mike Williams. And it was because Mike Williams makes that catch partly because he's excellent.
Well,
and partly because
one of the best jump ball receivers in the game now.
No doubt, but also when you believe in the quarterback, man.
Oh, of course.
And the quarterback believe you see like that thing that Deshaun has elevate the team. But in that division, man, boy, you better have a dude like that because everyone else except Pittsburgh does.
That's the thing about
they
Pittsburgh.
They got Tomlin.
When you look at them, like from the quarterback position, what is Mitch Trubisky going to be? What is Kenny Pickett going to be? Because
not that
you can't have deficiencies at that position with the three other teams in that division.
Mike in Michigan, should the Browns get Jimmy G?
Absolutely, they should get him. And I like the affinity, the communication, the reality that you and Harry bring together, Max. And I'm a Browns fan from the days when Paul Warfield was a receiver, Leroy Kelly, the running back. And there was a defensive safety whose last name was Kellerman. I don't know if you knew that. But here's why.
No relation, I assure you.
Here's why they should do it. It's an asset move. If Jimmy Garoppolo goes in, he's going to bring a boost to the team. He's a good team player. Everybody out in San Francisco loves him. That gives the team a boost. And if he can come in and win, now the Browns have a real positive decision to make. Do we stay with Garoppolo for the rest of the season, or do we bring in Deshaun? And either way,
no, you're paying a guy 200. I think that's Harry's point. You're paying a guy $230 million. He's going to play.
Guaranteed
at signing. He's going to play.
And Jacoby Brissett can start 6-0. When Deshaun Watson comes back, he's going to be the starting quarterback.
Not Mark Bulger taking Kurt Warner's job because they went 8-0 and Kurt Warner, he didn't have that. If you guarantee a guy $230 million, it doesn't matter if Jimmy Garoppolo just coming off a Super Bowl win and went 8-0. They will start Deshaun Watson. He will start when he is ready. This is Keyshawn J. Willimax coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. We're going to continue this conversation. What will the NFL's response be to the verdict? Keyshawn J. Willimax, Harry Douglas in for Key and J, ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We have enormous breaking news from the National Football League. Adam Schefter, the decision has been made. What can you tell us?
Sue L. Robinson, the retired federal judge, handed down her decision. Deshaun Watson has been suspended for 6 games.
DeAndre Hopkins has been suspended for 6 games for a PED violation.
I think Zeke Elliott had 6 games for accusations of domestic violence. So there is no penalty that kind of goes back in time and has these women not experienced the things that they experienced. So there's no penalty that solves that.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, Harry Douglas in for Key and J. Today, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance and joined right now by the great Jeff Darlington, who is back. Yeah, he's back home because he has the palm tree in the background, just to let you know. What's going on, Jeff? How are you?
What's up, fellas?
So
good, guys. What's going on?
What do you think about the 6 games? To me, Jeff, it seemed like the absolute minimum they could get away with would be 6 games, and sure enough, it was 6 games. What did you think?
Well, Max, you know, let's just remind people that the NFL expressed to Sue Robinson that they wanted to see Deshaun Watson suspended for 1 year with an indefinite reestablishment into the league following that. So at least 1 year. The NFLPA on the other side said, we don't think he should be suspended at all. Sue Robinson did not merely split the difference and say, all right, 8 games or 9 games or whatever. She instead said less than that, which was 6 games, which is what makes now Roger Goodell and the NFL's decision so much more interesting. They're now in that 3-day window to appeal, and ultimately Goodell with the power in that appeals process to say, no, we want more than 6 games.
Jeff, what about the conspiracy theory? And I'm putting a couple different things that that are out there together here. That on the one hand, the NFL installs someone who is not familiar with, her area of expertise, I think, is patent law. So this is not really an expert in this field of law. And so they get a result which they wanted, which is a low suspension. But then they also get to step in and say, hey, we want more. So they wind up with 8 games and they get to be the good guy and the tough guy. And you know, what do you think of that kind of idea?
So I don't sense that to be credible from the standpoint that there were owners like Jerry Jones, after going through the process with Ezekiel Elliott, who wanted to see the disciplinary process change so that Roger Goodell was not as much in the forefront of this decision making. Mm-hmm. So the NFL on their side also wanted something similar. The fascinating way that to me, the thing that I can't wrap my head around, and maybe this is where we wind up diving down rabbit holes, but I'll save that for others. The fascinating element to me is that the appeals process ultimately still ends with Roger Goodell, that we're going to go through this process with Sue Robinson, this respected judge. She's going to hand down her decision. And then if either side decides to appeal, it will be Roger Goodell who decides the ultimate punishment, and that is final and binding. That's not something that the NFL just imposed because they wanted to feel all powerful. The NFLPA, the union, literally agreed to allow that to happen. So I don't get the sense that the NFL is doing this in some, you know, backdoor meeting where they're saying this is how we can still wield our power here. This was the way it was negotiated in order to take Goodell out of the process. And yet both sides still agreed to, at the end of the day, allow Goodell to have the power to determine exactly what they were trying to keep him from determining.
Yeah, that's the mind-boggling thing, Jeff. What do you think led Judge Sue L. Robinson to land at six games for Deshaun Watson? What factor into that?
Well, we can merely read her report to try to understand that. And I think the complicated component for a lot of people who have read that report is that Sue Robinson does not take issue with what the NFL presents in order to come to their recommendation of a one-year suspension. She doesn't question the facts. In fact, she specifically states that the NFL has met the burden, that they have essentially taken this circumstantial evidence, which is the testimonies of those involved, and it was just four of the 24 who filed their civil lawsuits that the NFL spoke to. Sue Robinson saying that this is credible, that I believe this happened with Deshaun Watson. And what she disagreed on, though, was the level of discipline. And you can read it in her conclusion. It's a little bit tricky, I think, for people to read what she says happened and then read her determination of a six-game suspension. And that is where the NFL now has the opportunity to step in and say, all right, you agreed with us. How can we possibly take this set of facts and come to this conclusion? And that no one exactly knows, other than a one-page conclusion, how Sue Robinson got there.
Thank you, as always, Jeff Darlington. That is ESPN NFL reporter, of course, Jeff. When are you going to be in New York next, guys. Jeff? When do we have you in studio again?
Hey, it was a lovely. It was great to be there. So yeah. Hopefully soon.
Yes, we had a great time. I miss you, man. I wish you was in studio right now.
Yeah, that's right.
To be honest.
I miss you.
But look at the background. Let's see his shot again. Let's see Jeff's shot again. Look at that.
The
come
palm
on.
Trees in the palm background.
He ain't going anywhere.
You're living the
they'd
lavish
life. They'd have to get me out of there kicking and screaming.
You guys can come down here. You know, we could.
That's not a bad idea, but not till winter. In the winter, I think that's an even better idea. Jeff Darlington, ladies and gentlemen. Cool. Thanks, Jeff. So should they trade for Jimmy G or not? Should the Browns trade for Jimmy G or not? It's going to be six games, but we don't know what the NFL is going to do. Well, you wait for them to cut Jimmy G. Then you can pick him up. Yeah, but then someone, maybe the Seattle Seahawks, someone else grabs him. You want to assure yourself a Super Bowl caliber quarterback as your backup for Deshaun?
Max, you're something else.
You give him what? If you give him a sixth-round pick and knock $5 million off his salary, I'll bet you scoop him up right now.
Well, that's the thing, though. You have to alter the salary.
Yeah, throw a couple million.
If you're the Cleveland Browns, you would have to offer.
NFL owners got a couple million in between cushions of the sofa. Antoine in Wisconsin, what should they do?
Man, I'm a 49ers fan, and Cleveland shouldn't trade for Jimmy G, especially not at six games. Right, it's not enough for a couple different reasons, right? Six games, not enough. Let Brissett run that. And then, do you trust Cleveland to have Jimmy G and Deshaun Watson on the roster after that? You don't trust that franchise to do that. I don't think none of us do.
I don't know about that. Hold on. I don't really see it as controversial because Deshaun Watson got $230 guaranteed. It's his job. It's his. Doesn't matter what Jimmy G does. It's Deshaun Watson's
Jimmy
job.
G, I would think, would understand that, especially with the guaranteed money being $230 million. He would understand that if he's coming in for six games, okay, it's just sparingly.
And then I would have him on the roster because if anything happened to my Deshaun quarterback, I got a dude who came one throw away. Yeah, but that's because San Francisco had a defense and a running game. And what's Cleveland got?
Defense and a run game.
Marty in Wisconsin, what should they do, Marty?
I'm in Cleveland, bro.
Oh, sorry. I said Wisconsin. Cleveland.
That's
my
right.
Bad.
I'm in Cleveland. I don't think the question is whether we should bother with Jimmy G. I think the question the Browns asked themselves was, is Jacoby better than Baker? And I think he is in Stefanski's offense. Hmm. And secondly, remember, on a team built very similar to ours, the Crows won it all with Trent Dilfer. So you never know. But
well,
I don't want
bring
Jimmy
up
G.
Trent Dilfer. That was at this point a million years ago, and the league has changed. When was the last time a Trent Dilfer won? You could say Nick Foles, but I want to point something out about Nick Foles. He was in a Pac-12 that was ripe, I mean, like rife with quarterbacks. He was the second best one, and in the Pac-12 behind Andrew Luck, who went one overall when he was with Arizona. He was better than Osweiler. He was better than what's his name from SC. He turns pro and under Chip Kelly had a season of 27 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Then he went to Jeff Fisher and, you know, didn't do anything like everyone else, right? And then he goes back to Philadelphia, wins the Super Bowl, wins Super Bowl MVP, and then the following year they were dead in the water, like 500 or a game under. When Wentz goes down again, they catch fire with Foles, and he wins a playoff game on the road at Soldier Field and came a throwaway, if the receiver turns around, from winning again at New Orleans. Like, Nick Foles ain't Trent Dilfer. Nick Foles, when he was on the field in a certain situation, was an excellent quarterback. So when was the last time a Trent Dilfer type won the Super Bowl? Probably Trent Dilfer. It doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it has to be more. I mean, you got to have a little bit more to you than a Trent Dilfer.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, with Nick Foles, you got to remember also, Doug Peterson tailored everything towards Nick Foles. He understood, okay, we don't have Carson Wentz. Let me tailor some things to fit Nick Foles. Not everybody, an offensive coordinator or play caller, understands that, or head coach understands that. Sometimes they try to, you know, we can do a little thing. We can do some of the same things that we did with Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles. They may have that mindset, not understanding that I need to tailor some things a little bit
there
for Nick Foles.
There are some guys.
But the Eagles did that. They tailored things.
Yeah, or really, Nick Foles just ran the offense instead of having to doing these off-schedule plays that Carson Wentz was doing. He just ran Peterson's offense. Peterson didn't have to worry about his ego and all that. But there are some guys like Foles, like in Chicago, was garbage because they had no offensive line. Yep. And he needs this pocket to step into.
Yep.
He must. If he does, he can throw it down the field. In Chicago, he was garbage. Okay. But, and so you could say Jimmy G is the same kind of guy. But the Browns have it. If Cleveland didn't have that stuff, that'd be one thing. They have, a couple years ago, the only time I can remember, PFF had them as the number one pass-blocking offensive line and the number one run-blocking offensive line.
Yep.
I don't remember that ever happening before.
Yep.
So they got a real good offensive line. They got, as you mentioned earlier in the show, two stud backs.
Two tight ends.
They got two tight ends who can catch Njogu, and they can catch, they can block.
Marty Cooper, you have a receiver.
They got playmakers on defense.
Donovan Peoples-Jones. They drafted David Bell out of Purdue.
They're stacked. Like, when people look at the Chargers, and on paper they go, ooh, that might be the best, most loaded team in football this year. But the Browns are kind of the same. They don't have the Chargers receivers at the moment.
Exactly.
But they got everything else and then some. So if you're thinking, well, you don't need Garoppolo only succeeds in certain conditions.
Well, these are
the conditions.
Cleveland has it. It's there.
Why it shouldn't be so hard for the best quarterback in football to convince you that he's the best quarterback in football. I'll bet you if we put everyone on a lie detector test and their lives depended on it.
Head scratcher.
Boy, I'll bet you they would have different answers than some of them have now. What does Patrick Mahomes have to do to convince everyone that he's the best quarterback in football right now?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Not a damn thing.
Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback I've ever seen. He's the best quarterback I've ever seen.
It's crazy to me, though, Max. Like, we hear all these anonymous sources from all these anonymous losers in my eyes. That's what I call it, because you don't want to put your name on it. But when you look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes, you look at the last 4 years. Since he became a starting quarterback, Max, he's hosted 4 AFC Championship games. He's been to 2 Super Bowls, won one, won an MVP, threw
over 50 touchdowns
in a season. Like, what more do you want him to do? In my eyes, nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson had a baby. His name is LeBron James. He combines the two games of those guys. the higher pitched the level of the parents in this little game, the higher pitched their skills, the higher pitched the offspring skills, right? So I think of like Westbrook as Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson had a baby. Great, right? But it ain't the same thing as MJ and Magic.
Yeah.
And that really does describe when you think of the difference between LeBron and Westbrook, right? Patrick Mahomes is Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers had a baby. Now, people might be like, yeah, but Rodgers was already Favre 2.0. Incredible arm, can do all these off-schedule things, but also same team, but also took care of the football, didn't turn it over. So how is Mahomes any different than Rodgers? You know how he's different to me? A little bigger and stronger, like Favre, like a little like more, I don't know, mesomorphic or whatever you would say, like a little stockier. But also, and his arm, although Rodgers throws laser-guided missiles, there was something a little more electric about Favre's arm. Like when I tell my grandkids, Grandpa, what's the greatest throwers of the football you ever seen? I would say like Favre jumps to mind. It was just electric coming out of his hand. Mahomes has that. But more than that, Mahomes' teammates seem to respond to him and the media and fans the way they responded to Favre. People like that gunslinger, draw it up with a stick in the backyard in the dirt kind of mentality that you got from Favre and Mahomes. So, yes, Rodgers is Favre 2.0, but he misses that to me, that stuff that I just described. Mahomes has that, plus he doesn't turn the ball over. He's Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre had a baby. And if you put everyone on a lie detector test, you put anyone on a lie detector test, Martians had the death beam pointed at Earth. If it says you lie, the earth is blown up. You got to tell the truth to save the earth. And you ask people who's the best quarterback they've ever seen, I'll bet you everyone's going to say Patrick Mahomes. I'll bet you when it gets real, people say Patrick Mahomes. This dude is ridiculous.
Max, here's one of the scariest things about Patrick Mahomes. And you have a guy like that who can beat you from the pocket, but it's the scramble plays, the off-script plays that scare the hell out of you. Because we all know DBs and corners can't cover for a long period of time. I don't care how good you are in the secondary. If you got to cover for 5 and 6 seconds, that's not good. And when you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes who can roll to the right and throw it 50, 60 on the dime and hit a guy in stride.
To the other side of the field. He's throwing it across the field.
Or roll opposite, exactly. Or he can roll opposite and throw across his body and still hit his target. He could throw it left hand. He could throw it sidearm. You have
no
all the
look.
Different arm. Yeah, he have all the different arm angles. That's what really scares you more so than anything, because it's hard to prepare for off-script plays.
Now
scramble drill, that's what we call it.
He had a bad AFC championship game this year. He did. That's going to happen from time to time. But look, when people say, who's the Michael Jordan of football? It doesn't just mean Tom Brady. In other words, you don't just take the greatest player who ever lived and say, that's the MJ of a certain sport. What saying the Michael Jordan of a certain sport really means is first the eyeball test. You go, oh my God, I've never seen anything like that. Okay? You could just see he's better than everybody physically. Then the numbers test. You look at the numbers, you go, oh damn, they're saying exactly what I'm seeing. And then the winning test. Oh, his team wins more than everyone else's, right? I don't know that Mahomes is the MJ of the NFL, but to start his career, he's coming closer than anyone ever has. The eyeball test says, damn, he's just better than everyone. You look at the numbers as a rookie, 50 TDs to 12 INTs, that ratio got better the next year. You look at the QBRs, he's always near the top of the charts, at the top, near the top, even without an offensive line, right? And then you talk about winning. First year, he went to the AFC Championship game and was advancing to the Super Bowl. Just remember, Tom Brady threw an interception, game over, Chiefs go to the Super Bowl. Oh, wait. Pre-snap penalty, Brady gets the ball back. Mahomes never touches it again in overtime. No one complained about the rules back then. But when Josh Allen didn't get to touch it in overtime against Mahomes, they changed the rule that day. That day, I was like, that's it. That can't happen. So that's the reason he didn't go to the Super Bowl year one. And given what the Rams did in the Super Bowl, I'm going to say the Chiefs would have beaten the Rams. But who knows? Year two, he wins the Super Bowl. He wins the Super Bowl and wins Super Bowl MVP. So year one, 50 touchdowns, should have gone to the Super Bowl, not his fault. Year two, wins the Super Bowl, wins Super Bowl MVP, won the MVP of the regular season first year. Year three, gets back to the Super Bowl. His whole offensive line is gone. He's running for his life. They got killed, right? But You know what I'm going to remember from that Super Bowl, Harry? It's the only thing I'm really going to remember. All those crazy plays Patrick Mahomes made and didn't make. He was doing superhuman things. That's the thing that stands out in your mind about that Super Bowl.
To the point that you had players from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers saying, like, wow, how did he even make that throw?
How did he even make the throw?
How did he do that? And I think last year, starting 3-4, right?
And then last year, by the way, gets back to the championship game.
Yeah, but I mean, but you got to remember early on, they didn't start well. They started 3-4.
Yeah.
And I thought it was it's going to be amazing for Patrick Mahomes and the team as well from a learning perspective, because now they can go back and review film. Hey, we should have took what the defense gave us here, mm-hmm. right? It's too high shell. Let's try to run the football. If not, let's try to get it inside to our slot receiver or our tight end, right? But most likely you see a too high shell, which is two safeties high. You had the corners playing cover two. You want to run the football because the numbers are in your favor. You don't have eight people within the box. In the confines of the line of scrimmage. I think he's going to learn from those type of things. And I know Tyreek Hill is going to be a huge loss for him as well, but I think they're collectively, I think they have more guys, and he can diversify the football to more guys and give other guys opportunities. And I think that's going to play a huge role for Patrick Mahomes and his growth as well.
If you could have any quarterback in football this season, who would it be?
I would say Patrick Mahomes.
Me too. If the question is football, the answer is Patrick Mahomes. What if Patrick Mahomes wasn't available? Who you take?
Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady?
I'm taking Joe Burrow. Okay, Aaron Rodgers, and if I'm not, and three, I'm taking Tom Brady over Aaron Rodgers. What I've seen under pressure recently, I was wrong all those years when I said Rodgers was just better than Brady. Mm-hmm. Brady's better than Rodgers, just physically not as talented, but better as a quarterback than Rodgers under pressure.
He was also wrong about Tom. Just had the anniversary last week. It's okay. Apparently. Bring it up. Had the anniversary last week.
You know what I don't like about it, though? I made the same prediction about Brett Favre. Everyone told me I was crazy. Then he fell off the cliff. No one remembers that one. I did the same thing with Peyton Manning because no one had ever been good past the age of 41. I was right about that one. So I just said the same thing about Brady. The only thing I regret, and no one ever plays the next day, I said he's going to be a bum in short order. And the next day I came out and said, look, I don't like to name call. And I didn't mean bum. I was being glib. What I mean is he's going to be a jag, just a guy, right? And he could still be in the NFL, could still win a Super Bowl, possible, with a guy who's experienced the way Peyton did with the Broncos, but he won't be a great player anymore. And clearly I was wrong about that. But the bum thing, as soon as it came out of my mouth, I shouldn't say, like, even if I'm joking around, and that's the thing that gets played.
But hey, you motivated Tom Brady.
I did.
To the point where he tweeted you
yeah.
on the anniversary.
Yeah.
He tweeted you.
He did. And by the way, it turns out I'm the second most important person in this whole NFL era. I'm the motivation
Max,
for Tom Brady.
Man.
I'm the second greatest quarterback who ever lived. Why Harry thinks Josh Allen getting into a fight at training camp is not a big deal. Not at all.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now time for another Camp Confidential on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the Buffalo Bills.
Oh.
You're supposed to let it ride, Yates.
you got to be careful with G-Rap. But, oh, Yates got me with the cool G-Rap on a Tuesday morning. Cool G-Rap.
I thought it was instrumental. We ain't going to play like that today.
Extra read all about it in the papers.
Yates said he didn't want to go to the principal office
that's
today.
From
I got a dumb button, but we ain't trying to do that today. It's a Tuesday.
That's from G-Rap's third album. What do you call that? Right? That was the Ill Street Blues.
I think they call it Ill Street Blues.
That's the third album.
DJ Polo.
Best song I ever heard from G-Rap was one of the hardest beats ever called Not Go For Your Guns, which happens to be a great song. Mm-hmm. But by the way, this is what happens when you get old.
Come on, Yates, we need assistance.
This is what happens when you get old. Eric B. produced the track. Come on, Yates.
I'm drawing a blank right now.
Oh. All right. I'll remember it in a second. The fact that it's like my favorite song and I can't remember the name.
You're just having a brain.
What happens
right
when
now.
You're almost 50.
It happens to all of us.
Do you know I'll be 49 in a couple days? 49 years old.
What's the exact date?
Have you ever seen a man so handsome at 49? What's that?
What's the exact date?
Never mind that. Josh Allen had an altercation with defensive tackle Jordan Phillips on Saturday. He tweeted out, "Man, I love football. The boys got going yesterday, and it's all love. First day of pads, just pushing each other to be great." And he had a little heart. That is all. Elena Getzenberg, ESPN Bills reporter, with us now. Elena, thanks for joining us. Good morning. And what did you think about what happened with Josh Allen in an on-field fight?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on, and happy early birthday, I guess, is in order. Yeah, I mean, I think it got a little overblown. I don't even know if I would call it a fight. It was more of a, you know, there's a lot of camp fight words thrown around, a skirmish maybe. But Josh Allen did, you know, he had some contact from defensive tackle Jordan Phillips. He then used his hands to kind of shove him in the face mask, helmet, and then everything kind of went out from there. But I think it got overblown. I don't think it was really the end of the world. Obviously, the quarterbacks, you know, teams don't want to see involved in that sort of thing, but it was the last play of practice. Didn't really end up being a big deal. I think it was just because Josh got involved that it was, and kind of you could argue initiated it, that it got more attention than it probably deserved. But there was a bigger fight at practice yesterday. I think it's kind of just the thing you sort of see.
Yeah, Elena, I would even say this, being a former NFL guy and being in those training camps for 10 years, not to even mention the years I did it when I was in college. Sometimes it can get a little hot out there, right? And it looks like a turf field that we're practicing on. So the UV rays coming up from that turf field is going to make it even probably 10 or 15 degrees hotter. So sometimes, you know, the patience of players runs thin. But I will say this, when you look at the quarterback position and you see Josh Allen, even though I thought it was nothing and Jordan Phillips didn't barely even touch him, there's a written rule. Like, you do not go near the quarterback. Better yet, the franchise quarterback, the face of the franchise, because granted, you don't want anything. Yeah, you don't touch the money, the investment that the ownership and management has made in Josh Allen. But at the same time, I didn't think it was anything. I thought it was just more so people are tired, it's hot outside, and people are fed up, probably ready to get inside and get some Gatorade, get some water, get in the cold tubs, cool down a little bit. But I will tell Jordan Phillips, listen, you're on a one-year deal, $5 million contract. That's the investment of the franchise. If Josh Allen goes down, by any means, the Buffalo Bills season is depleted.
Yeah.
So make sure you be careful. Any guys that are watching right now, you're in training camp, you have the TVs on, stay away from the franchise quarterback. I don't care how small, how big, stay away from the franchise quarterback,
Elena,
because he is the franchise.
Elena, you're up close to this, talking to Elena Getzenberg, ESPN Bills reporter. Josh Allen in an altercation with a teammate on the field. He's joked about it since. However, as Harry Douglas just points out, maybe don't touch the money. They got all that investment in Josh Allen. How are the two of them dealing with the hype around this now?
I mean, I think Josh's tweet kind of says a lot. They're just kind of trying to downplay it at this point. I think, like, they're kind of trying to move on. Like I said, there was a fight yesterday at camp where punches were thrown, and that wasn't even really the case in this one. So I think they're really trying to downplay it. Like you said, tensions were high. It was the first day in pads. There was the end of camp. Josh had ended up on the ground, kind of Ed Oliver got close to him, and he'd ended up on the ground in a different practice. So I think it had been multiple things built up. But there's no, they've 100% moved on. And I think Josh's tweet kind of trying to calm down the situation says a lot about that. They're, you know, it was a camp fight, like you said, and they're just trying to keep on moving here.
That's Elena Getzenberg, our ESPN Bills reporter. Thank you so much, Elena. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So, Harry, something occurs to me here.
Mm-hmm.
How much, when you see your quarterback who's a big, strong kid, right?
Yep.
And he actually started the physical fight. Does that, because quarterbacks are kind of off there, right? Does that kind of endear him to the team in a certain way? You know your quarterback's about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a little bit. But I think the Buffalo Bills and their organization and Josh Allen's teammates, they already know that about him. You look at him in the run game, right? He's not trying to go out of bounds. He's trying to punish defenders. And he plays with this bravado, this orneriness and this self-confidence that you want from your quarterback. And they already knew that about Josh Allen. So this for them is probably like nothing because they're accustomed to seeing Josh Allen probably talk smack to people on the football field, do everything possible to get a first down and win a football game for his team. So they already knew that about him.
The name of the song that I was trying to remember is Bad to the Bone.
Ooh.
Yates, there's a pretty long instrumental. I mean, there's enough instrumental to play, some bars to play, that you don't have to worry about G-Rap cursing on the air and stuff like that. Yates, want to tee up Bad to the Bone so we can come in with it next segment.
I'll find it for you. I got you.
Oh, my God. This don't you worry. Harry. And G-Rap, and the reason Jay-Z said hearing me rap is like hearing G-Rap in his prime is because when you have to pick out from that era, you have to pick out the dude that gave you the feeling like, oh, this is the most cutting-edge stuff. It was cool G-Rap. Back in the day when G-Rap Versus dropped, he'd have a single drop. Everyone who wrote rhymes would rip them up and throw them out and start again. He was one of those dudes. So, yeah, cool G-Rap. See, and people outside of New York haven't even heard of him these years. Bad to the Bone. We're going to play that coming up. What are the expectations for Zach Wilson this season? And by the way, did you see that Yankees deadline pickup? They needed some starting pitching. They went out and got it. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Harry Douglas in for Key and J. ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.